the Christian pilgrim, or the true Christian's life, a journey towards heaven. Hebrews 11:13-14. And confess that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. The apostle here is setting forth the excellencies of the grace of faith by the glorious effects and happy issue of it in the saints of the Old Testament. He had spoken in the preceding part of the chapter particularly of Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Jacob. Having enumerated those instances, he takes notice that these all died in faith, not having the promises, but having seen them afar off, were persuaded of them, and embraced them, confessed that they were strangers. In these words, the apostle seems to have a more particular respect to Abraham and Sarah, and their kindred, who came with them from Haran, and from Ur of the Chaldees, as appears by the 15th verse, where the apostle says, "And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned." Two things may be observed here. One, what these saints confessed of themselves, that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Thus we have a particular account concerning Abraham. "I'm a stranger and a sojourner with you." And it seems to have been the general sense of the patriarchs by what Jacob says to Pharaoh. "And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their pilgrimage. I'm a stranger and a sojourner with you. It's all my fathers were." The inference that the apostle draws from hence, that they sought another country as their home. "For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country." In confessing that they were strangers, they plainly declared that this is not their country, that this is not the place where they are at home. And in confessing themselves to be pilgrims, they declared plainly that this is not their settled abode, but that they have respect to some other country which they seek and to which they are traveling. Section 1. That this life ought to be so spent by us as to be only a journey or pilgrimage towards heaven. Here I would observe that we ought not to rest in the world and its enjoyments, but should desire heaven. We should seek first the kingdom of God. We ought above all things to desire a heavenly happiness, to be with God, and dwell with Jesus Christ. Though surrounded with outward enjoyments and settled in families with desirable friends and relations, though we have companions whose society is delightful and children in whom we see many promising qualifications, though we live by good neighbors and are generally beloved where known, yet we ought to not take our rest in these things as our portion. We should be so far from resting in them that we should desire to leave them all in God's due time. We ought to possess, enjoy, and use them, with no other view but readily to quit them whenever we are called to it, and to change them willingly and cheerfully for heaven. A traveler is not wont to rest in what he meets with, however comfortable and pleasing on the road. If he passeth through pleasant places, flowery meadows, or shady groves, he does not take up his content in these things, but only takes a transient view of them as he goes along. He is not enticed by fine appearances to put off the thought of proceeding. No, but his journey's end is in his mind. If he meets with comfortable accommodations at an inn, he entertains no thoughts of settling there. He considers that these things are not his own, that he is but a stranger, and when he has refreshed himself or tarried for a night, he is for going forward. And it is pleasant to him to think that so much of the way is gone. so we should desire heaven more than the comforts and enjoyments of this life. The apostle mentions it as an encouraging, comfortable consideration to Christians that they draw near to their happiness. Now, is our salvation nearer than when we believed? Our hearts ought to be loose to these things, as that of a man on a journey, that we may as cheerfully part with them whenever God calls. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remains that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they did not weep, and they that rejoice as though they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passes away. These things are only lent to us for a little while, to serve a present turn, but we should set our hearts on heaven as our inheritance forever. Number 2, we ought to seek heaven by traveling in the way that leads there. This is a way of holiness. We should choose and desire to travel there in this way and in no other. But part with all those carnal appetites which as weights will tend to hinder us. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily besets us. And let us run with patience the race set before us. However pleasant the gratification of any appetite may be, we must lay it aside, if it be a hindrance or a stumbling block in the way to heaven. We should travel on in the way of obedience to all God's commands, even the difficult as well as the easy, denying all our sinful inclinations and interests. The way to heaven is ascending. We must be content to travel uphill, though it be hard and tiresome and contrary to the natural bias of our flesh. We should follow Christ. The path he traveled was the right way to heaven. We should take up our cross and follow him in meekness and lowliness of heart, obedience and charity, diligence to do good and patience under afflictions. The way to heaven is a heavenly life, an imitation of those who are in heaven in their holy enjoyments, loving, adoring, serving, and praising God and the Lamb. Even if we go to heaven with the gratification of our lusts, we should prefer a way of holiness and conformity to the spiritual self-denying rules of the gospel. We should travel on in this way in a laborious manner. Long journeys are attended with toil and fatigue, especially if through a wilderness. Persons in such a case expect no other than to suffer hardships and weariness. So we should travel in this way of holiness, improving our time and strength, to surmount the difficulties and obstacles that are in the way. The land we have to travel through is a wilderness. There are many mountains, rocks, and rough places that we must go over, and therefore there is a necessity that we should lay out our strength. Number 4, our whole lives ought to be spent in traveling this road. We ought to begin early. This should be our first concern. When persons are become capable of acting, when they first set out in the world, they should set out on this journey, and we ought to travel on with assiduity. It ought to be the work of every day. We should often think of our journey's end and make it our daily work to travel on in the way that leads to it. He who is on a journey is often thinking of the destined place, and it is his daily care and business to get along and to improve his time to get towards his journey's end. Thus should heaven be continually in our thoughts and the immediate entrance or passage to it, namely death, should be present with us. We ought to persevere in this way as long as we live. Let us run with patience a race that is set before us. Though the road be difficult and toilsome, we must hold out with patience and be content to endure hardships. Though the journey be long, Yet we must not stop short, but hold on till we arrive at the place we seek. Nor should we be discouraged with the length and difficulties of the way as the children of Israel were, and be for turning back again. All our thought and design should be to press forward till we arrive. We ought to be continually growing in holiness, and in that respect coming nearer and nearer to heaven. We should be endeavoring to come nearer to heaven, and being more heavenly, becoming more and more like the inhabitants of heaven in respect of holiness and conformity to God, the knowledge of God in Christ, and clear views of the glory of God, the beauty of Christ, and the excellency of divine things as we come nearer to the beatific vision. We should labor to be continually growing in divine love, that this may be an increasing flame in our hearts to lay us in holy in this flame and obedience in a heavenly conversation, that we may do the will of God on earth as the angels do in heaven in comfort and spiritual joy, in sensible communion with God in Jesus Christ. Our path should be as a shining light that shines more and more to the perfect day. We ought to be hungering and thirsting after righteousness, after an increase in righteousness, as newborn babes desire the sincere milk of the Word that you may grow thereby. The perfection of heaven should be our mark. Just one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto the things that are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. All other concerns of life ought to be entirely subordinate to this. When a man is on a journey, all the steps he takes are subordinate to the aim of getting to his journey's end. And if he carries money or provisions with him, it is to supply him in his journey. So we ought wholly to subordinate all other business and all other temporal enjoyments to this affair of traveling to heaven. When anything we have becomes a clog and a hindrance to us, we should quit it immediately. The use of our worldly enjoyments and possessions should be with such a view and in such a manner as to further us in our way heavenward. Thus we should eat and drink and clothe ourselves and improve the conversation and enjoyment of friends. And whatever business we are setting about, whatever design we are engaging in, we should inquire with ourselves whether this business or undertaking will forward us in a way to heaven. And if not, we should quit it. Section 2. Why the Christian's life is a journey or pilgrimage. This world is not our abiding place. Our continuance here is but very short. Man's days on the earth are as a shadow. It was never designed by God that this world should be our home. Neither did God give us these temporal accommodations for that end. If God has given us ample estates and children or other pleasant friends, it is with no such design that we should be furnished here as for a settled abode, but with a design that we should use them for the present, and then leave them in a very little time. When we are called to any secular business, or charged with the care of a family, if we improve our lives to any other purpose than as a journey toward heaven, all our labor will be lost. If we spend our lives in the pursuit of temporal happiness, as riches or sensual pleasures, credit and esteem from men, delight in our own children, and the prospect of seeing them well brought up and well settled, all the things will be of little significance to us. Death will blow up all our hopes and will put an end to these enjoyments. The places that have known us will know us no more, and the eye that has seen us shall see us no more. We must be taken away forever from all these things. And it is uncertain when. It may be soon after we are put into the possession of them, And then where will be all our worldly enjoyments and employments when we are laid in the silent grave? Job 14:12. So man lies down and rise not again till the heavens be no more. Number 2, the future world was designed to be our settled and everlasting abode. There it was intended that we should be fixed in there alone, its a lasting habitation and a lasting inheritance. The present state is short and transitory, but our state in the other world is everlasting. And as we are there first, so must we be without change. Our state in the future world, therefore, being eternal, is of so much greater importance than our state here, that all our concerns in this world should be wholly subordinated to it. Heaven is that place alone where our highest end and highest good is to be obtained. God has made us for himself. Of him and through him and to him are all things. Therefore, then do we attain to our highest end when we are brought to God. But that is by being brought to heaven, for that is God's throne, the place of his special presence. There is but a very imperfect union with God to be had in this world, a very imperfect knowledge of him in the midst of much darkness, a very imperfect conformity to God mingled with abundance of estrangement. Here we can serve and glorify God, but in a very imperfect manner, our service being mingled with sin which dishonors God. But when we get to heaven, if ever that be, we shall be brought to a perfect union with God, and have more clear views of him. There shall we be fully conformed to God, without any remaining sin, for we shall see him as he is. There we shall serve God perfectly, and glorify him in an exalted manner, even to the utmost of the powers and capacities of our nature. Then we shall perfectly give up ourselves to God. Our hearts will be pure and holy offerings presented in a flame of divine love. God is the highest good of the reasonable creature, and the enjoyment of him is the only happiness with which our souls can be satisfied. To go to heaven, fully to enjoy God, is infinitely better than the most pleasant accommodations here. Number 4, our present state, and all that belongs to it, is designed by him that made all things to be holy in order to another world. This world was made for a place of preparation for another. Man's mortal life was given him that he might be prepared for his fixed state. And all that God has here given us is given to this purpose. The sun shines, and the rain falls upon us, and the earth yields her increase to us for this end. Civil, ecclesiastical, and family affairs and all our personal concerns are designed and ordered in subordination to a future world by the maker and disposer of all things. To this, therefore, they ought to be subordinated. Instruction afforded by the consideration that life is a journey, section 3. This doctrine may teach us moderation in our mourning for the loss of such dear friends, who while they lived improved their lives to right purposes. If they lived a holy life, then their lives were a journey towards heaven. And why should we be immoderate in mourning when they got to their journey's end? Death, though it appears to us with a frightful aspect, is to them a great blessing. Their end is happy and better than the beginning. The day of their death is better to them than the day of their birth. While they lived, they desired heaven and chose it above this world or any of its enjoyments. For this they earnestly longed. And why should we grieve that they have obtained it? Now they have got to their Father's house. They find more comfort 1,000 times now that they are got home than they did in their journey. In this world they underwent much labor and toil. It was a wilderness that they passed through. There were many difficulties in the way, mountains and rough places. It was laborious and fatiguing to travel the road. And then they had many wearisome days and nights. But but now they have got to their everlasting rest. And I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, Write, Blessed are the dead which die in the Lord. From henceforth, yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works to follow them. To look back upon the difficulties and sorrows and dangers of life, rejoicing that they have surmounted them all. We are ready to look upon death as their calamity, and to mourn that those who are so dear to us should be in the dark grave, that they that are transformed to corruption and worms, taken away from their dear children and enjoyments and so on, as though they were in awful circumstances. But this is owing to our infirmity. They are in a happy condition, inconceivably blessed. They do not mourn, but rejoice with exceeding joy. Their mouths are filled with joyful songs, and they drink at rivers of pleasure. They find no mixture of grief, that they have changed their earthly enjoyments and the company of mortals for heaven. Their life here, though in the best circumstances, was attended with much that was adverse and afflictive. But now, there is an end to all adversity. They shall hunger no more, nor thirst any more. Neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them to living fountains of waters. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. It is true, we shall see them no more in this world. Yet we ought to consider that we are traveling towards the same place. And why should we break our hearts that they have got there before us? We are following after them in hope, as soon as we get to our journey's end, to be with them again in better circumstances. A degree of mourning for near relations when departed is not inconsistent with Christianity, but very agreeable to it. For as long as we are flesh and blood, we have animal propensities and affections. But we have just reason that our mourning should be mingled with joy. But I would not have you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning them that are asleep, that you sorrow not, even as others that have no hope, that they should not sorrow as a heathen who had no knowledge of a future happiness. This appears by the following verse. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so them also which sleep in Jesus will God bring with him. If our lives ought to be only a journey towards heaven, how ill do they improve their lives that spend them in traveling towards hell. Some men spend their whole lives from their infancy to their dying day in going down to the broad way to destruction. They not only draw near to hell as to time, but they every day grow more ripe for destruction. They are more assimilated to the inhabitants of the infernal world. All others press forward in a straight and narrow way to life and laboriously travel up the hill toward Zion against the inclinations and tendency of the flesh. These run with a swift career down to eternal death. This is the employment of every day with all wicked men, and the whole day is spent in it. As soon as ever they awake in the morning, they set out anew in the way to hell, and spend every waking moment in it. They begin in early days, the wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they are born, speaking lies. They hold it with perseverance. Many of them live to be old and are never weary of it. Though they live to be 100 years old, they will not cease traveling in the way to hell till they arrive there. And all the concerns of life are subordinated to this employment. A wicked man is a servant of sin. His powers and faculties are employed in the service of sin and in fitness for hell. And all his possessions are so used by him as to be subservient to that same purpose. Men spend their time in treasuring up wrath against the day of wrath. Thus do all unclean persons who live in lascivious practices and sin. All malicious persons, all profane persons, and neglected duties of religion. Thus do all unjust persons and those who are fraudulent and oppressive in their dealings. Thus do all backbiters and revilers, all covetous persons that set their hearts chiefly on the riches of this world. Thus do tavern haunters and frequenters of evil company, and many other kinds that might be mentioned. Thus, the bulk of mankind are hastening on in the broad way to destruction, which is, as it were, filled up with a multitude that are going on in it with one accord, and they are every day going into hell out of this broad way by thousands. Multitudes are continually flowing down into the great lake of fire and brimstone as some mighty river constantly disembogs its water into the ocean.